Today I'll be presenting sermon number 2 in a series of 3 sermons. And in this sermon series, we are defining knowledge and understanding and wisdom. And these 3 words or concepts are related to one another. Knowledge can be transformed into understanding, and understanding can be applied to a person's moral character and discerning between evil and good and doing what's right, and that is wisdom, the end result of that process, that flow from knowledge to understanding to wisdom. The title of my sermon today is Get Understanding. Get Understanding. Now, in each of these 3 sermons that I'm giving, I'm going to, at the front end, define those 3 terms for you, and then also conclude by rereading them at the very end to hopefully solidify our understanding of the information that we're presenting here. Okay. Now, I didn't go to Wikipedia or to Webster's or whatever for these definitions. Rather, I just tried to think about what is knowledge really, and what is understanding, and what is wisdom. And this is the best effort that I came up with. Okay, knowledge. Knowledge consists of data and facts and observations. Information of various sorts from various sources. This information is acquired by an individual either through personal experience and observations via the 5 senses or by instruction. Understanding. Understanding is a mental construct. It's an abstraction made in the human mind to make sense of many distinct pieces of knowledge. Understanding is the ability to use knowledge in order to comprehend a concept or principle, essentially you're making sense of the information within the knowledge that you have. Wisdom. Wisdom is the ability and willingness to apply understanding to life situations in order to formulate sound-minded decisions and to make proper moral judgments. Discerning between right and wrong, and consistently and consciously choosing righteous behavior. So those with knowledge are able to collect and access information of various sorts. But it's possible to have knowledge and not have yet understanding and wisdom. Someone might have the facts, but they don't know what they mean or what to do next, how to proceed. Those with understanding are able to extract the meaning out of the information they have, the knowledge they have. They see through the facts to the dynamics of what and how and why things work. Understanding is a lens which brings the facts into clear focus and produces principles or concepts to live by. Those with wisdom know how to apply the understanding in making judgments and discerning between good and evil. Those with wisdom can determine what actions to take next. They do the right thing from a moral perspective in any given situation. Now, in contrast, there are those who have some knowledge or even understanding, but who consistently do the wrong thing. That is unwise. That is not wisdom. I have a number of bullet points that I'd like to share with you that hopefully will give us a good understanding of the concept of understanding. First of all, we'd like to ask a question: who is the source of all understanding? Let's turn to Isaiah chapter 40. Isaiah 40 and verse 14. Talking about God. With whom did he, God, take counsel, and whoever instructed him and taught him in the path of justice? Who taught him knowledge and showed him the way of understanding? Okay. Well, of course, no one, because God is eternal. He knows everything that there is to know. And so nobody had to teach God understanding. He has had it from eternity past. A New Testament reference. The Apostle Paul speaking to Timothy in his second letter to Timothy and chapter 2. So 2 Timothy 2 and verse 7. Consider what I say, and may the eternal, or may the Lord give you understanding in all things. So God is the source of all understanding. And of course, Jesus Christ had that as a youth back in Luke chapter 2, and the people were in amazement. All were astonished at the level of understanding in the questions that Jesus asked, as well as the answers that he gave. So Luke chapter 2 and verse 47. And all who heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. Later on in the book of Luke, unbeknownst for a while who they were even walking with, the disciples received a blessing from Jesus Christ to understand scriptures and how they applied to him. Luke 24 and verse 45. Then he opened their understanding, Jesus, to the disciples, that they might comprehend the scripture. It's one thing to just read it and on the surface kind of understand it, but to dig deep into the meaning and really understand it, you need a spiritual guide and help and strength to really uncover God's truth and have understanding of it. Another bullet point is that we should actively seek understanding. Not just something where we kind of sit in a seat and expect everything to flow into us automatically. No, there's something we should be doing. Let's turn first of all to Psalm 53 regarding this point of seeking understanding. Psalm 53. In verse 2. God looks down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there are any who understand and who seek God. Showing the importance of seeking understanding from God. Does anyone seek God? Of course, a great purpose for gaining understanding is to be able to develop a relationship with God. As son or daughter to a father. To find his truth. To understand his truth. Since we're here in Psalms, let's go to Psalm 119, the largest or the longest chapter in Scripture. Psalm 119 and verse 130. The entrance of your words gives light and it gives understanding to the simple. Okay, so you don't need a PhD. It's not just raw brain power that's important, as God blessing you so that you can understand his truth. Just over one book is Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 14. The heart of him who has understanding seeks knowledge. Okay, so it's an ongoing process. You're not just happy with the knowledge you have. You want to accumulate more. Why? In order to get more understanding. The more knowledge you have, then the easier it is for you to transform that knowledge and information into understanding. Okay, now what I'd like to do is have some made-up scenarios here, but I think they're realistic for the most part. To give you examples. Oh, I'm sorry. No. Yes, here we go. That comes at the bottom of this page. How to obtain more understanding? There's two ways we can do that. First of all, ask God in earnest prayer that he would grant that to you. Of course, we have the example in 1 Kings chapter 3 where God came to Solomon in a dream at the very beginning of Solomon's reigns and asked, "What shall I give you?" Well, that's a lot better than a genie in the lamp, is to have God himself, who is real, not the genie, and ask you anything that you want, I can grant you. And he was so pleased, of course, that Solomon asked for wisdom and understanding as he began his rule in Jerusalem, to learn to discern between right and wrong, to know how to judge. And secondly, in addition to asking God in prayer for understanding, we should also, on a regular basis, as we are doing here, meet with other believers who have knowledge and understanding, people of like mind. Okay, worship them, worship with them, and stir one another up to good works. Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews 10 verses 24 and 25. Let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. So continue to assemble with others, because it's for our mutual benefit. We all can gain from that sharing of knowledge and our faith. Okay, gaining understanding may take some time and effort. It doesn't happen overnight. So the next point is gaining understanding may require effort on our part. It will require effort on our part. Isaiah chapter 28. We have a passage probably fairly familiar to most of you about seeking out God's truth and why it might be challenging. Isaiah 28, verses 9 and 10. Whom will he teach knowledge? That was point number one, right? It starts with knowledge. And whom will he make to understand the message? That's the next or second part. Those just weaned from milk, those just drawn from the breast. For precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept. Line upon line, line upon line. Here a little, there a little. Okay? So, it's kind of like a jigsaw puzzle. You know, at the very beginning, you open the box, and no two pieces are connected, right? They're all separate, and you slop them on the card table or whatever surface that you're going to be using for the next. Well, how long does it take you to put together the puzzle? Is it a week or less? For whatever period of time. But there's some strategies. You know, the things that are about the same color kind of go together. Real giveaway, of course, is if you have puzzle pieces that have an edge, a flat edge to them. Of course, those are going to go on the border. And those that have two flat edges to form a corner, those go at the four corners of the puzzle. Right? So usually that's the first thing you do is try to get that frame there. And then you do the easy stuff, like if there's a bunch of bright red ones all together forming a tulip or something in the end puzzle, you can kind of get those pieces together. And over time, you recognize patterns in the pieces and see pieces that might start go and fit together. And pretty soon, you have a pretty good picture of what's going on. But it's the same thing with knowledge going to understanding. You need to put the little pieces together until you start having understanding of what all that knowledge means or implies or what kind of impact it may have. Job chapter 12 and verse 12. You see how wisdom and understanding may require some time or spiritual maturity in order to acquire it or to develop it. Job 12:12. Wisdom is with aged men, and with length of days comes understanding. Okay? Those who live a longer life, obviously, and have therefore more life experiences, have more time and opportunity to grow in understanding and in wisdom. So it's going to take effort on our part. Ask God for help. Meet with people of like mind. Gain understanding may take some time and effort, and it's like working the jigsaw puzzle. The next bullet point is the fear of God is the starting point. Okay? The fear of God should motivate you to, first of all, get knowledge, and then to turn that knowledge into understanding, and then finally have wisdom by applying it to your life. Okay? So, the fear of God is the catalyst that sets this whole procedure into motion. Just a reference for you, Psalm 111, verse 10. Psalm 111:10 says, the fear of the Lord is wisdom, and keeping God's law is understanding. We will look at that verse in a little more detail on sermon number 3 when we talk about wisdom. But let's go ahead and turn to Proverbs chapter 9 and verse 10. Proverbs 9:10. The fear of the eternal is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Okay, so the fear of God is that catalyst that helps us go from knowledge to understanding to wisdom. Okay, now I have three topics that I chose to give examples. And these are just made-up scenarios, but I think fairly realistic. I thought of three topics that we can choose to kind of put a scenario here together where we're evaluating. How does this person start with a little bit of knowledge, and then how do they progress to understanding, eventually leading to wisdom? And the three topics I chose were the universe, or should I say creation, or creationism, sexual conduct, and the annual festivals found in Leviticus in the Pentateuch. Okay? So first of all, we have example number one, the universe or creation. A person sees the stars in the night sky. She knows that they are huge balls of gas creating a tremendous surge of energy and radiation in all directions for billions of years. So this is some knowledge she has, little isolated facts or concepts. She is also aware of the Big Bang Theory, hasn't really looked into it too much, but it's widely accepted by most people, including the scientific community, which states that all energy and matter in the physical universe came into being at once from a point of singularity about 13.5 billion years ago until it exploded. She now reads that the first law of thermodynamics states that the amount of energy and matter within any system is always conserved. It cannot be created or destroyed. In essence, energy and matter can be converted from one form into another form, but the total amount of energy and matter is preserved. So to have a whole universe of energy and matter suddenly exist without an outside cause or force would violate the long-held and repeatedly proven first law of thermodynamics. Okay, so that's some knowledge that this lady has. Now let's take it a step further. She starts putting the pieces of the puzzle together and now is getting some understanding in the broader context and seeing it as a concept. In searching the internet for articles addressing creationism, she comes across a United Church of God online publication entitled, Creation or Evolution? Does it really matter what you believe? She finds the material so interesting and compelling that she reads the entire electronic document in one sitting. Based upon both scientific observations and the established laws of science, she concludes that it's much easier to believe that the creation is the handiwork of a creator. There was a cause. There is an intelligent being. Believing in a divine being whom she cannot see seems to be a much more probable scenario than the entire cosmos coming into existence just spontaneously, without any force or intelligence bringing it into existence. So now she has used additional knowledge to what she previously knew and has come to an understanding, a firm belief that creation requires a creator, and in like manner, life requires a life giver. The existence of all matter and energy in space and time is attributable to an all-powerful and supremely intelligent being. So she now asks herself, so where do I go from here? I've got some understanding, some things that were never that settled in my mind and heart before like this. If the Bible is true and if it is reliable regarding the creation of the universe, is the Bible then also a reliable source of truth regarding other subjects, including how to live your life from a moral standpoint? Okay, so she's now gathered some knowledge, turned it into understanding, and now she's at a crossroads. What is she going to do about that? Now, she's going to be bucking most people, what most people believe about it, but she's on the very brink of wisdom if she starts applying the principles of the Bible to her life. She has the confidence that the Bible gives her the right scoop or the right story or the proper story about creation, about how everything came into being. But now she's wondering, then the Bible might be a good source of information to give my life moral guidance. That's scenario number one, with creationism. The second one has to do with sexual conduct. A young adult has a general idea that the Bible is fairly strict in its teaching of this matter, but he has no specifics. In high school, he learned that there are many kinds of sexual behaviors, very diverse, and most are totally the opposite of what the Bible teaches. Now he's attending college and has two roommates. He knows that his roommates view some pornography from time to time. They indulge themselves in viewing some strange sexual acts online. He's also aware there are certain venereal diseases or sexually transmitted diseases to be concerned about. So he has a little bit of knowledge here and there, but not really what I'd call understanding. Let's take that step now. He decides to examine what the Bible teaches specifically about human sexuality. He reads in Genesis that God created man in his own image from the beginning, and he made them male and female. So there must be some purpose there. Then he finds the most comprehensive information in Leviticus chapters 18 and 20. Leviticus 18 lists the various sexual sins and abnormalities that you are not to do. And Leviticus 20, two chapters later, tells you the punishment, the specific punishments and penalties for doing those sexual practices that are forbidden by God. He also reads the teachings of Jesus Christ and the Apostle Paul regarding sexual practices and concludes that if indeed the Bible is true, the only sexual activity sanctioned by God is exclusively between one male and one female, And the two people in that relationship must remain true to each other until the marriage is terminated by death. Matthew chapter 19. Matthew 19, verses 3 through 9. The Pharisees also came to Jesus, testing him and saying to him, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason?" And Jesus answered and said to them, "Have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female? And he said, 'For this reason a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh.' So then, they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate." But they said to him, "Why then did Moses command to give a certificate of divorce and to put her away?" And Jesus said to them, "Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts," and I still remember Lynn Leiby's message about the hardness of your hearts, "because of that, he permitted you to divorce your wives, but from the beginning, it was not so. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery, and whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery." Romans 7, verses 2 and 3. Romans 7, verse 2. "For the woman who has a husband is bound by the law to her husband as long as she lives. But if the husband dies, she is released from the law of her husband. So then, if while her husband lives, she marries another man, she will be called an adulteress. But if her husband dies, she is free from the law, so that she is no adulteress, even though she has married another man." So by this time, in reading those passages, this gentleman is pretty well convinced that the Bible's teaching on sexual relations is correct, and probably should be followed if you want to have a blessed life, full of intimacy with your future mate, and not to have a lot of excess baggage in your life. Okay, so that's example two. It has to do with sexual conduct. Example number three, God's annual festivals. Okay, once again, I'll start with the knowledge that the individual gains, and then we'll say, here's the beginning of understanding, and it results ultimately in wisdom. God's annual festivals. Here's the scenario. A born-again Christian decides to read the Bible from Genesis to Revelation throughout the course of the year. When she reads during February, the 23rd chapter of Leviticus, she becomes aware for the first time of these yearly commanded observations. She has some girlfriends who are Jewish, and she knows that they keep some sort of Passover celebration each spring. And she also happens to know that Acts 12 and verse 4 mentions Easter. Okay? She knows that's what the King James Version says. Okay, so that's the knowledge that she has. She's just starting to be exposed to the idea, oh, there might be some things out there that I'm lacking and not doing as a born-again Christian. Okay, so here becomes understanding now. She continues to do some more research and discovers that all four gospel accounts of Jesus' ministry demonstrate that he regularly attended the feasts of God listed in Leviticus chapter 3 in Jerusalem. She also sees in the book of Acts a number of references to various feast days, which strongly suggests that the early New Testament church continued to keep these days, even years and decades after Jesus Christ's ministry, and to the Gentiles as well as the Jews. Then she happens to discover a direct command from Paul, the apostle to the Gentiles, 30 years after Jesus' death, speaking to a Corinthian congregation that's primarily Gentile in nature. Okay? And it's a direct command from Paul to keep the Feast of Unleavened Bread. 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 6 through 8. "Your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Therefore, purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. For indeed, Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us." Okay. And finally, she learns that verse in King James Version that talks about Easter All of the scholars agree that it's a mistranslation of the word Pascha, which all scholars admit refers to the Passover rather than Easter. So for her, now she has some understanding. It looks like there's some days that she's not keeping as a born-again Christian. She has to decide what to do next. And there's going to be a problem here because the family, her family, is really into Xmas, or rather Christmas and Easter. Okay? So she could be at the verge of wisdom as well as the previous man and woman that we talked about regarding creationism and sexuality. Okay, so those are the three scenarios, and those will be updated when I give the sermon on wisdom. We will see what these individuals did with their understanding. Did they follow the understanding, or did they try to refute it and run away from it? Did they reject it? What happens with those three scenarios? Another bullet point here is it's a matter of heart, not just in your head. Let's turn to Psalm 119. We were there once before. Verse 130. Psalm 119. This time just verse 34. Give me understanding and I will keep your law. See how closely understanding is with moral principles here? Indeed, I shall observe it with my whole heart. Okay, so we should have our heart into this. Trying to keep God's way with our whole heart. Okay, so we must put effort into the process of turning knowledge into true understanding and then applying that knowledge or that understanding to our lives. Proverbs chapter 2, verses 2 and 3. Incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding. It's not just a matter, once again, of head knowledge. We need to have our heart and soul and being in it. God has put understanding into the human heart. And even the Old Testament hero Job, who was mentioned in the first message today, thank you, Christopher, says this in Job chapter 38. Job 38 and verse 36. Who has put wisdom in the mind, or who has given understanding to the heart? Well, it's God, of course, and he later in that chapter confirms that. Okay, so it's a matter of the heart. Another bullet point, the value of understanding. The value of understanding. Proverbs chapter 16. Proverbs 16 and verse 16. How much better to get wisdom than gold, and to get understanding is to be chosen rather than silver. Wow. Better than precious metals. I won't have to listen to William Devane again. Proverbs, I'm sorry. Let's look at Zechariah now 13, one of the minor prophets. Zechariah 13. And verse 9. I will bring one third through the fire, and I will refine them as silver is refined, and test them as gold is tested. Okay, so here it talks about a purification process that God is going to take people through. And so in life, as was mentioned in the first message, we will have things we have to face, that some adversity in life, some trials. Okay, so it says God will refine these individuals as silver and gold are refined. Then the very next book, which is the last one in the Old Testament according to the order that we typically follow in Scripture, Malachi. Malachi chapter 3, verses 2 and 3. Actually, let's start in verse 1 of Malachi 3. Behold, I send my messenger, and he will prepare the way before me, and the Eternal whom you seek will suddenly come to his temple. Even the messenger of the covenant in whom you delight, behold, he is coming, says the Lord of hosts. Okay, so some interesting times coming up. But who can endure the day of his coming, and who can stand when he appears? For he is like a refiner's fire and like a launderer's soap. So God will refine the sons of Levi, and early he said he would refine all men. So So precious metals are not to be valued as much as understanding and knowledge. How many of you have ever heard the expression, so-and-so, this person or that, is of a sterling character? You heard that? Okay. Pure silver is what it's referring to. Or maybe you're familiar with the expression that someone or something is golden. You know, what does that mean when something is golden? If you describe something as golden, you mean it's wonderful. It's like the best of its kind. It's like to be successful and rewarding and pleasurable. Job chapter 23. In my personal Bible study recently, I've been looking at the book of Job, and I'm kind of leaning towards maybe doing an entire series of sermons a la Mr. Sweat. Is that okay if I have expository preaching? But it'll take a number of weeks to put all of that together. But Job is such a fascinating book and so much to learn there for each and every one of us. Job chapter 23 and verse 10. Here in the midst of his struggles, we have a hope and a confidence that we see in Job that is not generally there in his dialogue with his three friends. So Job chapter 23 and verse 10. But he, God, knows the way that I will take, and when he has tested me, I shall come forth as gold. So despite going through perhaps some of the most horrific problems and trials and adversity that anyone has ever gone through, Job is confident that once this session of trials is over, I'll be okay. I'm going to hold on to my integrity in the right way, and I will be okay. I will be in a very good position with God. Hey, another thing we are going to talk about here, this bullet point, is understanding will yield blessings in our physical lives. Okay? It's not that we just do knowledge and understanding and wisdom for seeking and attaining God's kingdom. It's that understanding can yield blessings in our physical life here and now on this planet. Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs 3 and verse 13. Happy is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding, for her proceeds are better than, just like we read before, better than the profits of silver, and her grain is better than fine gold. She is more precious than rubies, so now we're getting into gemstones, and all the things you may desire cannot compare to her. Of course, that was Solomon's downfall, right? He did not follow Deuteronomy 17 about multiplying horses and wives and gold and silver, and he went into idolatry. Okay, so as much wisdom and understanding as God gave to him and allowed him to have, because he didn't always make the right decisions, unfortunately Solomon ended on a sour note in his life. Okay, so using the right knowledge, though, in order to come to an understanding of something, typically results in blessings and honor in this life. You know, godly understanding will yield blessings in our physical lives as well as incredible honor and glory, and that's for all eternity. Let's read three Proverbs here regarding this point about the blessings that understanding brings to this life. They're really close together, so you don't have to turn a lot of pages. Proverbs 16, verse 22. Understanding is a wellspring of life to him who has it, but the correction of fools is folly. Proverbs 17 and verse 27. He who has knowledge spares his words, and a man of understanding is of a calm spirit. Brethren, how many of us would be pulling our hair out right now with world conditions and national conditions, etc., if we didn't have the truth of God as an anchor in our life? To know that we have a wonderful future to look forward to, including all of you out there, and eventually all of mankind. Without that knowledge, life is so tenuous and so miserable, and there's so many potential ways we can wipe ourselves off of the earth. I don't know what I'd do. I hope we're all of that mindset to know that these spiritual matters are worth more than precious metals and gemstones. So of a calm spirit, We know the end result. We know God will never leave us or forsake us. Okay? Proverbs 19 and verse 8. He who gets wisdom loves his own soul. He who keeps understanding will find good. So it's not just having the understanding, it's keeping the understanding. It's taking that understanding, applying it to your life from a moral standpoint. Another bullet point here is the roles of parents in the ministry in giving understanding. Deuteronomy chapter 6 is very familiar to you, as most likely should be. Deuteronomy 6, beginning verse 3, therefore hear, O Israel, and be careful to observe that it may be well with you and that you may multiply greatly as the eternal God of your fathers has promised, a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength, and these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. Verse 7. Diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. So here, children are directed by God to take an active part in helping their children to gain knowledge and understanding. In Deuteronomy 4, just two chapters back, it says, teach your grandchildren. So even those of us who have 9 grandkids have a responsibility to continue to teach and to live, by example, God's way of life. Nehemiah chapter 8. Nehemiah 8, verses 7 and 8. Also, Jeshua, Bani, Sheriba, Jamin, and all these other Levitical names that are hard to pronounce. They helped the people to understand the law, and the people stood in their place. I believe it was for 4 hours. So they read distinctly from the book in the law of God, and they gave the sense and helped the people to understand the reading. That's one of the roles, of course, of the ministry in the Church of God, is to enable and encourage that understanding in the membership. Jeremiah chapter 3 talks about shepherds and sheep. Jeremiah chapter 3 and verse 15. Jeremiah 3:15, and I will give you shepherds according to my heart. So shepherds, ministry that is chosen by Jesus Christ and God the Father. And they will feed you with knowledge and understanding. Okay? But in the last sermon in this series, we will see that an individual must really apply that understanding to his or her life in order to actually have wisdom and the benefits of wisdom and to receive all the blessings of this life and beyond. Okay? So I will feed you with understanding and knowledge. Unfortunately, as we're winding down here, many will reject understanding, especially as it pertains to, or specifically for, the understanding that comes from the knowledge of God. Okay, you can have a certain understanding if it's based on faulty knowledge or false knowledge, then that whole understanding is faulty and inappropriate and not true. So many will reject understanding. This is the next to last bullet point. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. First Corinthians 1 and verse 19. It is written, and this is a quote from Isaiah chapter 29, verse 14. So Isaiah 29, 14. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. A more perhaps familiar scripture regarding this rejection of certain information that people should have had and lived by, but instead they rejected it. Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1 and verse 28. This dialogue is about the pagan world and some of the problems in the pagan world. Okay, so Romans 1:28, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, they had a general idea that, you know, there are gods or some supernatural forces, but they rejected anything that had to do with the true God. So even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting. What things are not fitting? Well, here we have a laundry list by Paul, and it's probably equaled only by 2 Timothy chapter 3 as far as listing all these evils that are going on. Okay, so verses 29 through 32. Being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, we talked about that earlier today, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness, they are whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful. And that undiscerning in verse 31 really means understanding. Who, verse 32, knowing the righteous judgment of God, so they did have some knowledge and understanding, but they rejected it. They rejected following it. They might have acknowledged it intellectually. But who, knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them. And boy, looking at our society now, the things that did not even used to be talked about are now supposed to be accepted and now supposed to be forced upon everyone else. Verse 31, once again, without understanding. And finally, I have a question. On what kind of foundation is your house built upon? I found an interesting scripture in Psalms, in researching this sermon, that I never had noticed or taken note of before. Proverbs chapter 24 and verse 3, and it has a really nice tie-in or parallel to the gospel and the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew. Proverbs 24 and verse 3. Through wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established, and by knowledge the rooms are filled with precious and pleasant riches. So there he mentions all those three things about how is a house built. Well, you're going to have some knowledge, you're going to have understanding, you're going to have wisdom in order to properly build your house. Matthew chapter 7. You probably knew I was going there next, right? Matthew 7. On what kind of foundation is your life built, is my life built? Here, Jesus Christ is concluding the Sermon on the Mount. How many sermons could be given on just that one sermon that Christ gave? But at the conclusion, Jesus makes an interesting statement here. Matthew 7, verses 24 to 27. Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat on that house, but it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. But everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain descended, the floods came, the winds blew, and beat on that house, and it fell. And great was its fall. You're talking about very salvation right there. In conclusion, let's read those three definitions again of knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. Knowledge consists of data and facts and observations, information of various sorts. This information is acquired by an individual either through personal experience and observations via the five senses or by instruction. Understanding is a moral construct made in the human mind in order to make sense of many distinct pieces of knowledge. Understanding is the ability to use knowledge in order to comprehend a concept or principle, essentially making sense of the information. Wisdom is the ability and willingness to apply understanding to life situations in order to formulate sound-minded decisions and to make proper moral judgments. Discerning between right and wrong, and consciously and consistently choosing righteous behavior. And brethren, there's a logical progression from knowledge to understanding to wisdom. The third and final sermon in this series will focus upon wisdom, and the end result of having wisdom in life is leading us to the ultimate goal of entering God's kingdom.